As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Be the best and you got to pay a little price. If you want it bad enough, you got to do a little extra things to get it.
Welcome to the 11 Personnel Podcast, your favorite Rams podcast. I'm your host, Jerome Rodrigue, and with me this week, my fabulous guest co-host, Stu Jackson of therams.com. Stu? How we doing?
Well, this is the second time in however many weeks that I've been on this podcast when it's been anything but a normal week. So I think I'm doing good. I mean, that's not to say that I don't enjoy making these appearances, but like, it's just the timing has always seemed to work out impeccably well where there's just some major development happening with the Rams as far as like something newsworthy and whatnot. So, but I suppose that's a good thing because it gives us a lot to talk about too.
Yeah, your appearance analytics are really strong, veering toward chaos there, Stu. I think it's funny because every time you're scheduled, it's like, some transaction, there's been a weird game, there's been this last week, obviously a very should have won loss situation full of oddities with the calls and the decision making on the Rams side of the offense and a implosion by the defense. And oh yeah, by the way, the kicker situation. And, but I can always count on you. It's like, okay, so look on the calendar when Stu's on the calendar, because the game right before it's probably going to be weird as hell. So it's good stuff. And we appreciate having you, Stu. There's a lot to get to this week, so we're just going to dive right in. Thank you guys. We're recording this on Thursday morning. Thank you guys for tuning in with us today and through the weekend. Hopefully this helps ease your commute. But the big news this week is, well, there's some big personal news for the McVay family this week. Congratulations to Sean McVay and Veronica McVay and the entire McVay family, the McVay, on the arrival of their son, Jordan John. Really, really special. Sean was right. He was not going to come during a game. And so we're already one for one in terms of this kid knows ball. So.
Well, and I think my favorite thing, too, is McVay referring to his wife as a stud once again?
Oh yeah.
You know, as She's far as how she handled it, which is like, you said it perfectly. Like if you watched even just a handful of, you know, Sean's press conferences, you know, that's as you said, or posted on X or Twitter or whatever a while back, like that's the highest compliment you can obviously get in McVay speak. And so we obviously know that that it's only the highest of praise, or he means very, very well by that.
I know. I was laughing because I was like thinking about Veronica, who's like one of the coolest people ever, and right. I was like, she is a stud. Yeah, I was like, that's perfect. Actually, yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. But we're just around it all the time, so we know how high of a compliment what that means. I love that the creative team over at the Rams announced it as a transaction on social media. That was a really nice. Nice and thoughtful touch, but congrats to the McVay family, the McVay, the family is growing. And, that's just really cool. I imagine at some point Sean will hit a wall this week, I don't have any personal experience with this, nor do you, I don't think, Stu, but unless I missed something significant along the way of our friendship here, but it's a cool thing. It's a special thing. You could see how emotional he got. And you know, I had to get a little joke in there when, and he, to his credit, I think he got the joke, but then was worried maybe I wasn't making a joke because I kept a straight face. But basically we were done talking about in his press conference, we were asking questions about fatherhood and what it was like and all of that. And then I, with a straight face, I was like, so you're bringing in kickers all week. How's his leg? And so you could see he laughed for a second and then was like, oh, wait, maybe this isn't a joke.
Yeah.
And she's asking about the new kicker. And you could see him flip immediately into serious coach mode, which was hilarious. Go back and watch that press conference at therams.com when you get a moment. It's good stuff. It really is the range of emotion there throughout the course of there's exhaustion, there's seriousness, there's joy. He gets emotional talking about, the baby's namesake, his grandfather, John McVay, who he lost last year, unfortunately. It's good stuff, but that sort of segues us into the kicker stuff. Longtime listeners of 11 Personnel know that we've covered this in depth for years. We are special teams enthusiasts on this podcast. One of my first mistakes that became a really fun inside joke on this show was the phrase always be talking about kickers or ABTAC, because I said in one of my many early, very inexperienced podcast rambles with a very patient Rich Hammond, it's like that saying, always be closing, except it's ABTAK, ABTAC. And then from there, this thing really went off the rails, which we love.
It's just become a bit at this point. Like, everything that comes after it, like special teams related that happens with the Rams, I'm convinced is just in part to like continue this bit and keep it going.
Yeah, we love a good bit. This is LA after all. If you're going to continue the bit, you got to commit to the bit. And the Rams have certainly committed to the bit. But this is one of my fondest, although it is chaotic on the Rams side, it is one of my fondest long-running inside jokes with the listeners of 11 Personnel, who will also, by the way, comment on stories, comment on tweets, post on Reddit, the phrase ABTAC, which then draws some confusion sometimes from people who are just passing through, just visiting and wonder what it means, which is always also funny. Anyway, we are always talking about special teams with this group. And right now we definitely are, after two missed field goals and a missed extra points in Sunday's seven point loss to the Pittsburgh Steelers and Brett Maher, who missed a 51 and a 53 yarder, as well as the extra point, was cut by the Rams on Tuesday morning. The Rams then signed Lucas Havrisik, who was on the Browns practice squad. Stu, I'm going to throw it to you here because you've talked to Lucas, who did not kick Wednesday in practice. We might get to see him kick. Today is Thursday. We might get to see him kick today and Friday. This is a fluid and evolving situation. The Rams are continuing to work out kickers. They're also potentially going to add someone to the practice squad. This situation is fluid, but first and foremost, you met Lucas, you talked to Lucas. What are your impressions of him? Very young kicker. Obviously, he also came highly recommended by some people the Rams know.
Yeah, I think the first impression is just how like energetic he is, honestly, and just kind of the vibe he has. It reminds me a lot of Jeremy Springer, the Rams assistant special teams coach, which coincidentally overlapped with him in three of the five seasons that Lucas was at the University of Arizona. And one of the interesting things that Lucas actually said yesterday was that Jeremy was probably the special teams coach that he spent the most time with when he was at Arizona. And so, you know, on the surface level, there's already that familiarity, but it goes, I guess, it reinforces that maybe it's a little bit deeper than just like, oh, well, you know, he coached him in college or whatever. And so, and I think the other thing that's, really neat about him too, is that he is a Riverside native. And so his family was super excited that, you know, this was the next stop in his journey, which he had been very transparent with them about, like, hey, look, this is how it works. And, you know, it sounded like he had explained to them, like, look, you know, there may be workouts and like this is kind of how the circuit works and things like that. And so that was also a really cool thing. But to get back to the point of what you had initially brought up as far as him coming highly recommended, it's almost full circle to the Matt Gay experience, where Matt himself actually gave some really positive feedback, it sounds like, on, you know, Lucas and their time together in Indianapolis, because they overlapped there this offseason. And so, you know, Johnny Hecker and Jake McQuaid are the ones to come to Sean McVay and recommend Matt Gay. And obviously that worked out really well for the Rams. And now you've got Matt, you know, doing the Rams a solid and saying, like, yeah, this, you know, this kid is solid. And so going to be interesting, because like you said, you know, McVay confirmed the other day that they've worked out some kickers. And so still don't know exactly if it's going to be Lucas who effectively replaces Brett, or if it's going to be, you know, somebody, if they end up signing someone on that they work out onto the practice squad or however that works. But really interesting dude, seems really happy to be here. And so you know, this is his first chance on a 53-man roster too, on an active roster. That's the other thing you have to understand. Like, he's, to this point, he's had basically an offseason with the Colts, time on their practice squad, time on the Browns practice squad. And so you know, a really big opportunity for him that obviously we'll see how it pans out here over the next few days.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. You got to see him kick, right? They have to see him kick in practice. This is a situation where Jeremy Springer has certainly seen him kick in the college setting. But one of the most important things about a full and true evaluation of a kicker is seeing how they are kicking, how the ball's coming off their foot, what it sounds like, which is wild, because this is a billion-dollar industry. And that's one of the most important evaluations of punters and kickers, is how it sounds, the ball sounds coming off their foot, which is actually when I talked to Chase Blackburn several months ago about Ethan Evans, that was one of the big things, is it sounds like so pure. The ball sounds so pure coming off of Ethan Evans's foot, which then I heard in training camp. I didn't know what he was talking about, right? And then you hear it in training camp and you're like, oh yeah, that's different than anything else I've ever heard. And so, but it's the in-person stuff. That's why part of the reason why they had such a hard time this last kicker carousel to get to Matt Gay was the COVID year. And when they brought in Sam Sloman, they had not worked him out in person. And there was a lot of things, including the vertical height off of his foot, that you couldn't really see on tape, that they had really tough lessons about, and really couldn't get evaluations on kickers until they actually got them in their building. So that's it. If Lucas doesn't stick, it's because they saw, heard something through actual reps and workout and practices. Now you can obviously work out players, which is a lot more helpful versus 2020 when they were dealing with this the first time, into that season. Now you can bring in guys for workouts, but it's going to be interesting. You know, you hope for him as a young person that this is it. This is the place. You hope for the Rams, obviously, that this is it, that this is like, okay, this carousel stops spinning. But I also want to bring up a point, and I wrote about this in my column. It's my weekly column is out this morning, usually runs Thursdays. I did a deep dive into, there's a contrast and a contradictory nature between the decisions that Sean McVay is making on fourth down, particularly fourth and five or less yards to gain, inclusive to inside the opponent's 45, that completely contradicts what they have all, including Sean, by the way, have all outlined as their team building model at this position specifically. And what I mean by that is, the Rams are going for it on fourth down in the lower third of the league, or in the lower third of the league, despite having a really positive second highest conversion rate in the league on fourth down. They're not going for it. Particularly, the Rams rank last in the league and going for it on fourth down and three or less yards to gain within the opponent's 45-yard line. Now, that's okay if you have an elite kicker. You can probably count on getting points. But they have all established this year, they've outlined, including Sean, again, he's a part of this. He's a part of personnel decisions, that they are not going to pay a kicker, cannot and will not. They said this with Matt Gay. They said this in a combination of kind of the age being a concern with Greg Zuerlein. They are not going to pay a kicker the way that their roster is currently set up. So using that logic, you cannot be making those types of conservative fourth down decisions where you're putting your kicker, who is not a proven elite kicker who can hit the long kicks, you're not putting him in, if you're putting him in those situations and not instead being more aggressive with that type of decision making to shorten the down and distance for the field goal, for example, or to go for touchdowns instead of field goals, it contradicts with the logic that they all collectively have outlined with their team build. And I'm just going to read, because I write better than I talk, and I'm just going to start rambling if I talk about this. I'm going to read the excerpt from my column. I hope you guys go subscribe to The Athletic. If you're just podcast listeners, we also love you. But I'm going to read this excerpt because I can write better than I talk. Okay. A study by Ben Baldwin, this is an excerpt from my Thursday morning column. A study by Ben Baldwin, who builds studies and shares NFL analytics models, found that McVay and the Rams have lost the fourth highest amount of total win probability per game this season by kicking or punting in go, what the model perceives as necessary conversion attempts on fourth down, scenarios. The results Baldwin's model finds are not dependent on whether a field goal is made or missed, but specifically on the decision itself. So Sunday, obviously, we know the Rams were in three medium go scenarios, and that was a missed field goal and two punts. The Rams actually have an excellent overall fourth down conversion rate of 75%. This ranks second in the NFL. However, they have only gone for it on fourth down 8 times, which is 18th in the league, and have faced fourth down with less than 5 yards to gain 25 times, which is 5th most. They have a decision EPA of minus 0.05 on fourth down plays, which is 3rd worst in the NFL. Again, also ignoring the result of the play, focusing on decision and process. Further, according to True Media, no team has opted to kick field goals on a higher percentage of its fourth down plays with 3 yards or fewer to go and inside the opponent's 45-yard line than the Rams since Sean McVay's first season in 2017. They are at a 58.3% rate there, and the NFL average is 42.7%. So based on all of that, we know that the kicking position is actually really important to the Rams from a coaching perspective, but from a roster building perspective, where, to be clear, Sean McVay also has input, it is not. Limited finances are the reason why the Rams did not extend Matt Gay, who now draws the second highest annual paycheck among NFL kickers from the Colts, and then also Greg Zuerlein, who makes the 16th most at $2.6 million. Per year, but that's still more than the Rams have been looking to pay. So for me, it's simple math. You don't want to pay an elite kicker, fine. Then you have to make more aggressive, like obviously within reason still, right? To make more aggressive within reason decisions on the fourth downs that would otherwise lead to 50 yards plus kicks for non-elite kickers who are not costing you money. But if you want to be the kick it guy in go situations, you have to probably pay an elite kicker. What was interesting, Stu, and I'm curious your thoughts on what Sean said in his press conference when I asked him about this economics, the contradictory economics or kickernomics specifically. Sean said, that is an exact conversation that I've had with myself and with other members of the staff as we move forward. I thought that was really, I was not expecting him to be so open about the fact that everything I just outlined, they have talked about exactly in terms of the contradictory logic that's happening with those fourth down kick or not kick situations.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Yeah, and I think that is reinforced by like also another comment he made where, you know, when he was talking about why things didn't work out with Brett, where, you know, he said, look, basically that the, and I'm paraphrasing just to be abundantly clear, that like it wasn't exclusively on Brett. Like as a play caller, he also felt like he put Brett in situations mm-hmm. where, kind of like you said, you know, maybe wasn't, you know, super ideal for him as far as having to kick some of those longer attempts, because all six of Brett's misses were from 40 plus yards. And so, you know, I imagine that in part though, that ties into, again, like I was saying with what McVay was talking about, as far as like, you know, that, and what you outlined with some of those fourth down decisions where, you know, if you do decide to be conservative, well, now you're going to be putting, depending on where that, I guess that fourth down is, obviously you're going to be putting a kicker who, again, whose misses are from the longer distances, you know, not in the best position to succeed at times. And so, yeah, that transparency, I agree with you, was very interesting because, you know, I think for the most part, you know, there are times, you know, we do get that from Sean, you know, when we talk to him each week. But that in particular was really interesting to hear.
Yeah. And it squares too with what, again, they all are making these personnel decisions together. So when they decide that they're going to overhaul certain parts of their roster, including special teams, to go extremely cheap in that phase, Sean McVay is also a part of that decision. And so my understanding of all of it is like, so the offense is going to be the rising tide that lifts all boats, right? Okay, so you're going to be aggressive. And you saw that in certain spurts. Like they have had a really high success rate when they have gone for it on fourth down. Like you've seen it. You see they have a menu of plays to choose from. It's just that they, I think, and again, like I'm a big fan of analytics, but I also, like most people who actually have an understanding of analytics, believe they are a tool, a piece of information to add to a bunch of other information you're also getting about, you know, being present in that moment where you're making the decision. And I'm a big fan of, as much as I love kickers and talking about kicking, as we know, I'm a big fan of aggressive decision making, especially when you have an offense that has historically shown it's capable of making those plays and moving the ball in that way. I'm a big fan of that, particularly in that like no man's land, kind of in the middle of the field. I think somewhat surprisingly, and I mean no offense to the defense, especially the young players who are learning, you've actually seen they've had an ability to force three and outs. The third and longs against like the Eagles, and then there was one third and long against the Steelers. Those were problematic, obviously. But you've also seen a defense that actually it can sort of you know, buckle down when it needs to. And I think I more so than I think what people expected this season so far. And so I think, you know, when you are coming out here and saying like, hey, this offense is going to lift everyone else, including you have to include special teams in that. And they did. And so that's why the logic that he was not going for it in those very clear, some of those are very clear go situations. Now, I'm not saying it's always the right decision to go for it on fourth down. I'm just saying some of those were very clear go situations, particularly with the person, the limited personnel that they had at kicker who had, he had not proven, I mean, in his career, he's made lots of field goals, but with the Rams, his body of data did not show that he was a consistent kicker outside of that parameter that you just illustrated, Stu. And so it's like you can't say one thing and then do another and then expect it to work out in football. The margins are too small. And I think that if you're saying for sure that your offense is going to be the thing that lifts you, and you're committed to that, and you as an organization are committed to this roster build and this type of team build that they have been, that they have structurally put into place, you've got to continue making those more aggressive decisions. You've got to do what it was that, you know, the plan would indicate would be the decision-making process because of the structure that has been put into place and agreed upon by everybody from the coaching staff to the front office. I mean, this is a collective decision. This isn't dissonance between one phase or another. Like, this is a collective decision. It's just, I think situationally, and then in some of these tighter games, I think we have seen tendencies from Sean to be more conservative. And I think we've seen him sort of turtle back down into those tendencies in some of these tighter games. And I think part of that, and not to overly psychoanalyze, although we know that I love to do that here, but like, I think part of that too can come from that feeling that you're that close to being really good, you know, that feeling like, oh, we have so much potential. Don't mess anything up. And then you freeze, you know? And I think that one thing that I've talked about on here, and Stu, we've talked about in person as well, is you see on the other side a defense that's just kind of like trying shit, you know, like it's just kind of playing free. And yeah, they're making mistakes. They are. And it's not excusing, especially what happened in the fourth quarter. Although those calls, that the PI call was terrible, needs to be reviewable. The spot was terrible, needs to be reviewable in that situation. And it was, if he had a timeout, but the league automatically should be able to look at something like that as well. And I think that, you know, this defense, it will make mistakes. It has made mistakes, but it's playing loose, not loose in the sense that it's sloppy. It has been sometimes, but loose in the sense that you go out and you watch them play. They're confident. They're energetic. They feel aggressive. They're playing tighter everywhere. They're trying all kinds of different stuff. The pressures that Raheem Morris and Eric Henderson are designing are different than anything we've seen here before. The coverage structures are much more aggressive than we saw over the last year. And it is interesting because they are a young group, and it's basically like, okay, well, it was expected that you were going to bump along the way and make mistakes, and they will, they have, and they will. But I wonder what sort of grace the offense has gotten, understanding that it was the side of the ball with the expectations placed upon it, not by anyone on the outside, by the way, because everyone thought this team would be ass, but on the inside, this was the offense was supposed to be what carried everything else. And I almost wonder if you sit there and you think about that and you really look, like they always say, look inward and say, like, I asked Matthew Stafford about this, about the adjustments and whether he feels that coaches to players, they are doing enough in game to adjust or able to adjust at a level that is productive. And he was really thoughtful. And he basically said, like, we have the play menu. Like, I believe we have enough plays. We just need to get to those plays. Like, we have enough plays and we can do it. And so it's like, okay, well, go out and be free, you know, go out and loosen up a little bit and do the things that feel like, you know, gives you a chance to succeed, because they do have the menu possible. I mean, hell, they pulled Daryl Henderson out of not playing football for months and months and months off the street, and he fits right back in seamlessly on Sunday. They pull Royce Freeman up off of practice squad, and he fits in seamlessly. Their starting running backs are out. They're running the ball effectively. They've got this rookie phenom, Puka Nacua. A Cooper Kupp game like that's an outlier for the negative. He's not going to have a bad game like that again, I don't think. Tutu Atwell needs to get fed, because when he gets his chance, Tutu Atwell is eating. And I just think, like, there's all this potential, and it almost feels like they're too tight in a way. And I just think, like, that perhaps could be a part of expectations. And frankly, I'll go so far as to say, I think you saw it with the Dan Campbell Lion teams, making decisions like that, the sort of like, FU decisions. And we won't say what Stafford called them, but it's a positive thing. Stu and I both overheard this. It's a positive thing, but we won't repeat that here. But it's something that a team takes on, and a feeling that they take on. It's not a Chargers thing where it's incongruent or just inconsistent identity. It's not that. it could be something else. It could be something that when you pick your spots and you're leaving the ball in the hands of the offense that you said was going to carry the team and you believed would carry the team in certain situations that don't set up kickers who can't kick at an elite level because they are not, they shouldn't be expected to at, in the category or the tier that they're in. You're not leaving it up to them to do things that are impossible for their ability. And instead you're saying, I'm going to leave it up to me and to my offense. A team carries that identity a little bit. They take on a little bit of that, that like, screw you, we're doing this kind of a thing. And I think that that's, I don't know. I wonder if we'll see more of that moving forward, frankly.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Jordan, I'm curious what, you know, the signing of Lucas especially means for those go situations, you know, if they face them where some of those long range attempts come up, because, at Arizona, Lucas was known as a long range specialist. Something I read, like this was a story that Joel Erickson of the Indianapolis Star wrote when Lucas had joined the Colts. And so, like, basically, he took all the longer attempts, and then he had a teammate who handled the shorter tries. And so,
interesting.
Yeah. So if you're trying to correct and make up for, you know, those issues with those longer attempts, and you have someone who has who you believe has the leg to make them, again, kicker situation still unresolved. We still don't know yet if it's going to be Lucas or somebody else who ends up being that replacement. Just to reiterate, but I wonder what effect, if at all, that has on. Like I said, those go situations where, you know, if again, if you've got the guy with the leg strength, does Sean feel more comfortable being like, you know what, just, you know, just send him out there or, you know, whoever it may be instead? Or, you know, if you have that assurance, are you, do you veer back toward being more aggressive in those go situations, knowing that, okay, if there is really a time where we, you know, you want to go to, you know, the kicker instead, then you have that maybe as a safeguard. But I don't know. I just found that interesting because, again, who knows who it ends up being. But if it does end up being Lucas, that's kind of an interesting dynamic at play that I wonder how it will potentially affect the play calling in those specific scenarios.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think what I think is a ideal situation is not being too not overcorrecting too far on either side. Like, I think probably a best case scenario is a combination of both, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you are more aggressive when the situation dictates it, because again, they're leaving win probability on the table. They're losing win probability because of specifically the decisions, not the misses, not the kicker who's kicking. Specifically, the decision is losing them win probability. And then on the other side, I think that having a kicker who can make those long range kicks and get you out of a jam is also valuable within the confines of they're not going to pay this guy. So you have to find that window of existence and compromise between, okay, you're not going to put the kicker in impossible situations or situations that vastly overestimate his ability based on the tier he's in and the pay structure. We're going to have enough menu and ability on fourth downs and the wherewithal and the aggressiveness to do those things, to not be in that gray area and that no man's land situation, and to go when the situation is leaning overwhelmingly toward a go, so that you're not, again, losing win probability just based on a decision, but also knowing when to pick those spots, understanding when to pick those spots, but also blending that with, okay, but if you can't, your kicker can make those long range. It's not automatic necessarily, because that would again require a higher tier of kicker, which means you're probably paying more than this team wants to pay. But at the same time, that compromise, I think, is going to be, they really did. They found, I think, a sweet spot with Matt Gay, where, you know, there was every once in a while still some questionable punting decisions and whatnot with that. But if you knew, I mean, you knew Matt Gay was going to be pretty much automatic from a certain range, which changes your play calling. It changes the types of things you do. Now, you can't just lean into that too much when you don't have that kicker. So again, it's all about finding that balance and that compromise. And I'm curious to see how it will shake out and unfold. Stu, the Rams are in Dallas this weekend, again, facing a dominant pass rushing group. They've struggled against dominant pass rushing groups in terms of their pass protection. They've still run the ball well against dominant defensive groups, dominant pass rushing groups. Really going to be interested to me. That's going to be a key. I'm really interested in that. Raheem Morris, Dan Quinn, that's going to be really interesting. Those two go way back. Sean McVay, Dan Quinn, those guys go way back. But Stu, one or two overarching thoughts before I let you out of here, either about last week, something you noticed, or about the coming Sunday matchup.
I'll go with something about the coming Sunday matchup. The thing that struck me, just at least catching what I was able to catch or watch from the end of the Cowboys' last game against the Chargers, was just the, at least in the fourth quarter or second half, the complementary effort they were able to put forth. And what I mean by that is basically, I mean, even if it maybe necessarily didn't look that like that the entire game, the fact that their offense was able to put their special teams in position to kick the go-ahead field goal, and then the defense was able to come through with the game sealing interception by Stephon Gilmore. Like, no matter, you know, what team you do that against, like, that's something that to me is a confidence building thing. And it's also something that, you know, again, that, you know, that McVay has talked about as far as like looking for, you know, those complementary performances, you know, especially in the second half in some of the losses the Rams have had this season. And so that's something that's kind of on my mind, you know, just wondering what impact and effect that might potentially have for the Cowboys as far as their confidence, in addition to obviously being well rested coming off their bye week and playing at home. And so it's, I guess that's kind of the contrast on my mind right now as mm-hmm. I'm, you know, thinking about this game, as far as like, you know, again, the Cowboys and sort of the complementary effort they were able to put together, and how the Rams, you know, as you've written about, and as, you know, Sean and all the other coaches and players have talked about, you know, with, in contrast with, you know, the complementary effort that the Rams have really been trying to seek, you know, in those, some of those close losses they've had.
Yeah, it's a good point. And then also your point reminded me, 2 weeks in a row, teams coming off their bye to play the Rams. They're going to be prepared. They're going to be well rested. They're healthy. I saw that injury report. I don't think I've seen an injury report like that in a really long time. It was a very clean injury report for.
I had to squint when I saw it was just one name.
Yeah, on the side of the Cowboys. The Rams are actually overall pretty healthy. I mean, relatively speaking, and everyone's got bumps and bruises. The guys on the injury report are not expected to be affected in terms of their game status. Guys, we're going to continue to update you on every breathless moment of this kicker carousel, but also, you know, the team as a whole. We haven't forgotten about them either. Rams, I think, are really looking at this as quite a challenge, as they should. Dallas is capable of really kind of making a run of it, I think, and everyone expected them to be competitive contention favorites, a couple of bumps along the way, but still a very, very good football team. Really, I'm really interested to see what will happen, how this will all unfold. And we're going to catch you guys next week. But before we leave you, make sure you're writing down everywhere you could find Stu Jackson's work over at therams.com. Find him on X, formerly Twitter. Find him on Threads, find him on Instagram, find him anywhere, find him in your local coffee shop and say hello. Meanwhile, you guys can find me over at theathletic.com. Please read that column, had some fun insight as well from Mike McCarthy, who, instead of an anonymous guest on Noseball Anonymous, right out there in the open, talking about some interesting parallels between Micah Parsons and Aaron Donald that I hope you guys enjoy. Meanwhile, I hope you guys are staying caffeinated. Hope you're staying hydrated. Hope you're taking care of each other. Hoping you're taking care of yourselves. And we'll catch you next week.
Hey, hey. Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.